case will be taken under advisement. We'll return now to the first case on the call of today, which we had delayed hearing oral argument in, the United States against Stanley Gilbert.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Billy Abelacious with Stanley Gilbert. First of all, I apologize for being late this morning. This case involves several issues. One is the suppression motion, which we're appealing. And the evidence seized pursuant to the search warrant should have been suppressed because there was no probable cause in the warrant, and the false statements were made either deliberately or recklessly. The false statements were material. Most importantly, it is shown by the fact that the district court judge relied on those statements. Even in excising the statement that the government admitted was false, the district court judge relied most heavily on the statement that there was an argument between the defendant and Jesse, which the witness Rodney saw, and Rodney stated to the police officer that the argument was about a girl. And because there had been a burglary report the day prior to the incident, the officer tried to elicit from the witness that the argument, that there was some argument about the burglary, and that the defendant thought that the burglary had been committed by the witness and Jesse, the witness's brother. Finally, the witness just said, "Well, it could have been. I didn't hear the whole argument." And from that statement, the officer changed it to Rodney said it was, he was being threatened by the defendant because the defendant thought that Rodney and Jesse had committed the burglary.
Here's my problem. In arguing that the statement in the affidavit concerning the burglary is a false statement, you rely on the transcript of a telephone conversation between Detective Gray and Rodney.
Correct.
But the affidavit indicates that statement was made by Rodney to Officer Bradburn at the scene.
Well,
not to Detective Gray in the follow-up conversation. So what am I right so far?
I'm not sure if it's specifically attributed to that conversation. But even if that's the case, and he has said something like that to Officer Bradburn, then he would have repeated it. But he was being pushed into saying that, and he kept resisting, saying he doesn't know anything about a burglary. This is what the argument was about. So he could not have said on one day, the whole thing was about a burglary, and then 2 days later say, oh, no, it was all about the girl, when it's clear from the other evidence, namely the statement that the wife gave to the police officers, that was the big problem. There was that Jesse showed up at the door with a gun, and the wife didn't let him in, because you wanted to see the girl, and then the next day, the girl's stepfather went over there to try to talk to Jesse.
Well, are you saying that the way that the transcript of that conversation with Detective Gray is relevant in assessing whether the affidavit falsely recounts the conversation between Rodney and Officer Bradburn is because he wouldn't have changed his story? I'm not quite sure I'm getting
it. It's not that he wouldn't have changed his story. It's that he couldn't have known something 2 days earlier and then not know it 2 days later. He either knew it or he didn't know it. And where the statement talks about what Rodney said. It recounts a story that is completely different. And so, first of all, even though that's what the affidavit says, it's for the officers to take a short statement on one night, two nights later, take a long statement, and then disregard the longer statement completely, doesn't make any sense. So even though the affidavit says this is what he said that night, it also says that there was a short statement taken that night and then a long statement taken a couple of days later. So the fact that the affidavit was then written after that, it had to have been used at the same time.
Although Rodney didn't mention the burglary in the later phone conversation, you know, without being directly asked.
Well, he didn't mention it even then.
But would it be unexpected that a person on further reflection wouldn't want to volunteer to the police that he's a victim of a burglary, or that the victim of a burglary believed that he was the perpetrator of that crime?
That conversation, it doesn't appear that that's what happened, first of all. But secondly, even if that is what happened, that's not the way that conversation went. I mean, the officer didn't say, well, didn't you tell me 2 days ago, or didn't you tell Officer Gray 2 days ago? The conversation was, didn't you hear that? And what was the conversation about? The conversation was all about the girl. Well, didn't you hear something about burglary? No, I didn't hear everything.
Isn't it possible they're talking about the same thing? I mean, when this incident was reported to the police, it was reported as a burglary when this fellow was trying to get in the door. But
it may
have been the same incident, couldn't it?
Your Honor, there's evidence in the record that shows that the burglary was reported the prior day. So it was a different incident. It was like the 19th, and then this was the 20th into the 21st. Or the 17th. I'm not exactly sure of the dates, but I did check it, and there is something in the record that refers to the burglary and the date that the burglary actually was reported, which was a different date than this incident.
Well, there's no doubt there was bad feeling between them, whatever the details may be. Isn't that correct?
It's correct that there was bad feeling between the defendant and Jesse. But what occurred and what the record shows, what the evidence shows, is that Stanley Gilbert first went to the Isaac house to try to talk to Jesse. Jesse wasn't there. He came back again. He wasn't nasty. He didn't get into anybody's face, because Rodney even testified at trial that he thought this guy was a pretty cool guy. So he wants to go and talk to Jesse about the incident and what happened. Then he comes back several times. Finally, he's driving around, and Jesse stops him in front of Jesse's house. And there's another altercation. And that's kind of how things escalated. It's not the way it appears in the affidavit. Gilbert thought that this guy, Rodney, burglarized his house. He came over there at 3 o'clock in the morning and shot off a gun to threaten Rodney. Rodney walks up to the car. He recognizes Gilbert, walks up to the car, hey, what's going on? And Gilbert says he wants to talk to Jesse, and Rodney tells him to come back the next day. Not leave, get away from here, but come back tomorrow to talk to Jesse. Jesse's sleeping. So yes, there was bad feelings between them, but it's not like it's portrayed in the affidavit. And the test is totality of the circumstances. And that's why, even though some of the statements that I've brought up in my brief may not be material in the strictest of senses, when you put it all together, those other statements are material. But the statement about the burglary is certainly material, because that is the clinching factor of what connects Stanley Gilbert to the address. And then there's a recurring statement that Sharice Gilbert confirmed on the night of the incident, on the 20th of November, that Stanley Gilbert was living there. Well, Sharice Gilbert didn't do that. I mean, she states pretty clearly in her interview that when the officers asked her on the 20th who lived there, she said herself and her children, and that Stanley sometimes stayed there. As far as so So when we take those false statements out, what we're basically left with is, and going back to another point, because the second statement was longer and more detailed, and because it was made before the affidavit, that had to have been taken into account. It couldn't have just been on the basis of the first conversation, ignoring the second conversation. And if you look at the second conversation, there is no way that someone could have thought that it was true that Rodney said he was threatened because of the burglary. There's no probable cause without these false statements. It's clear that the district court judge relied on false statements, and if we take all of them out, what we're left with is that there was a car registered to Stanley and Cherise Gilbert at a different address that was parked across that residence to be searched at some point in time, but not on the date of the incident. And there are no facts connecting the firearms to that address. It's simply the agent's statement that this, based on her experience and training, this is where firearms are kept. And that's really no different than on information and belief. And because the statements are so clearly changed, it had to be deliberate or at the very least reckless. I see the white light is on. Just wanted to address briefly the fact that this argument wasn't waived because the statement was not turned over. And my point about Brady and Giglio, it's not that I was arguing Brady and Giglio, I was just saying that because of Brady and Giglio, the argument wasn't waived. As far as the second point, Crawford versus Washington, it was not harmless error because it very clearly had to have contributed to the verdict because the indictment charged that the gun was possessed on the date of the search, not on the date of the incident. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
To please the court, my name is Tim A. Morrison. I'm an assistant U.S. attorney representing the government in this case of Stanley Gilbert. The court will permit me, I would like to address the second issue first, that is the Crawford hearsay statement, because obviously if this court does not determine that the error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, then the other two issues are really not to be decided because you will reverse this and send this back for retrial. So the issue is an examination of the statement that Cherise Gilbert gave in combination with the Crawford case. All of the, this case was decided, the Crawford case was decided 10 months after the trial of Mr. Gilbert. And although it decided that the hearsay statement taken by police would be a violation of the Confrontation Clause, this is not the kind of structural error that requires an automatic reversal by this court. In fact, this court has found in Ochoa that evidence admitted in violation of the Confrontation Clause is subject to a harmless error review. And the government's position is that applying this harmless error review, this court should find beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury would have convicted Gilbert without Cherise's statements. The essence of this case is that Rodney Miles sees Stanley Gilbert fire a weapon four times in an alleyway behind his home. He identifies Gilbert, and he also describes the blue Cadillac Gilbert was driving. Shell casings are found by Officer Bradburn in this alley when Miles calls and says there is a guy who's been shooting. Then about 5 days later, five, 6 days later, the police with the search warrant go into the house. They find the weapon in the same room as they find the naked Stanley Gilbert, who apparently was getting out of bed. And this weapon is the weapon that fired the four shell casings that were located in the alley. Now, an examination then of Cherise's statement basically says he had access. But it's the government's position that this is is really cumulative. It's not anything new, because obviously he had access, because we demonstrated that he had the weapon 6 days before when he was shooting it in an alley. We had a person identify him. He was driving a car which is registered to Stanley Gilbert. The shell casings came from that weapon. So what emphasis can you determine by looking at the government's case as to how critical this was or how important a piece of evidence this was? Look to the opening statement of the government. It was not mentioned. The reason why it was not mentioned was that Judge Barker had not made a decision whether or not it would be admissible. Then after it was admitted pursuant to Bradley at that point, and well before Crawford versus Washington was handed down, look at the closing argument of the government. There is a passing reference that who had access to this. Cherise Gilbert says she had access and he had access. But that's actually most of the reference to any statement that she made. So the emphasis of both the opening statement and the final argument was on evidence far away from Cherise Gilbert's statement, and the government would submit that this court should take that evidence aside and find beyond a reasonable doubt that the jury would have made the same decision had they not heard from Cherise.
Look, the statement by the wife places the high point gun in Gilbert's hands during the time of the incident, right?
By exclusion, Your Honor, yes.
Yeah.
He says, I didn't have it, I went up, it was gone, he was gone, he came back, it was there. Yes.
Right. Absent that, doesn't the entire case rest upon the credibility of Rodney's testimony? And I guess my question is, how can we know whether a jury would have found Rodney's testimony credible absent the corroboration by the wife that her husband had a gun at that time?
The jury would have already known that the wife had the gun, because in evidence was the fact that she had purchased that from Don's Guns, independent of her testimony. So the gun was in her hand. So they would have known it would have been in her. They would have had that piece of corroboration as well. I'm not sure that that's not cumulative as well. Because it's not as if this gun was placed in her hands by independent evidence other than her testimony that she had purchased it. The issue then that goes to the search warrant, which was issued in this case, as the court will see from looking back at the record established by Judge Barker in this, the issues were over the misstatement of the address and the false statement by Special Agent Roerig as to the subscriber information from the telephone company. And the government acknowledged that that information was false and asked this court to make a decision excluding that testimony. The issue which has come up as to whether or not the Special Agent Roerig was reckless, by stipulation, it was noted in the suppression hearing that Rodney Bradburn, who was the responding officer for the Indianapolis Police Department, actually talked to Ms. Gilbert, Cherise Gilbert, at the time that he responded to the shots fired call when he went to the house and knocked on the door. And at that time, he was told that Stanley Gilbert lived there. Therefore, her knowledge that the statement that she made was not one that she knew patently was wrong, that is, that he didn't live there, because she had other information that she knew that he did live there. She just didn't put that into the affidavit.
Under a Leon analysis, how does the exclusion of the wife's statement affect the Leon analysis?
I'm not sure that it does, Your Honor, since that would be pertaining to the admissibility. I'm not sure that any of the statements that she made were critical to the search warrant itself, because the statement that I was talking about just a moment ago with Special Agent Roaring, knowing what Brandburn had, the conversation that Brandburn had with Cherise Gilbert, that in other words Stanley lived there, that really can't be considered for probable cause purposes because that was not in the affidavit. That's just something that Special Agent Roaring knew, but she didn't place that in the affidavit, so that's really beyond our scope to try to include that here. Nevertheless, the government believes that in the analysis of the search warrant, that Leon does apply if the court finds there's no probable cause, because based on a review, this was not due to any kind of deliberate or reckless conduct on the part of Special Agent Roerig, and it's certainly a warrant which people who are reasonably well-trained are going to see as being valid. By reading the face of the warrant, people can understand what was going on and why a search would be authorized for that area and for that weapon, given the fact that it had been discharged in an alley a few days before. Finally, there's the issue that before the court, if the court gets beyond the reasonable doubt issue on the Crawford situation, which has to do with the attempted burglary as being a crime which should be considered a violent crime in the sentencing issue of whether or not Mr. Gilbert is an armed career criminal. And this court in both Collins and in Davis in Illinois and in Wisconsin has decided that attempted burglary is one of those otherwise crimes which provides a threat of violence, and I think the court's analysis in both Davis and in Collins are applicable to the situation. Therefore, the government would ask that the court find that the statement of Cherise Gilbert is, although we do confess error, that it is an error to do so, that it is one that is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt, would not have changed the jury's verdict, and that you sustain the court's decision on the search warrant as well as its analysis that attempted burglary is a crime of violence. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Mr. Morrison. How much time does counsel have? 3 minutes?
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to address the Crawford issue and respond to some of the arguments made by government counsel. Government counsel stated that the essence of the case here is the incident on the 20th, Rodney seeing the firearm, identifying Gilbert, the car, and so on. But that's not what the indictment charged. The indictment charged Gilbert's possession of the firearm on November 26th, which is the date that the search warrant took place. And without the wife's statement, the evidence shows that the wife owned a gun, and there was a gun found in the wife's bedroom that Gilbert was standing in the doorway of the bedroom with the door open. When the door was opened, the gun was in such a location that it could not be seen, so that from where Gilbert was standing, the gun could not be seen. The other thing was that Stanley Gilbert's testimony at trial was that he had stopped in early that morning to talk to his wife about the children, and he was going to take a bath. Not that he was getting out of bed. There was no testimony that he was in the process of getting out of bed.
All the supposes, Rodney testified that he saw your client with the gun, did he not?
That's correct, but that was on a different date, and then that is something that is probative of whether or not he had access to the gun on the 26th, but because he possessed a gun on another date, it does not necessarily mean that he had access to that gun at all times. And the evidence at trial, without the wife's testimony or without the wife's statement, does not show anything about his access. All it shows is that the gun was there, and that if the search is not suppressed, the gun was in the room. It was the wife's gun.
With respect to the search, assuming that we agree with you, all the false statements are out. What's left?
As far as the search warrant is concerned, the evidence should be suppressed because
what is left in the affidavit?
In the affidavit, mm-hmm. What's left is that Cherise Gilbert lived at that address. that there was a car that was registered to both Stanley and Cherise Gilbert, but to a different address, that there was utilities in the name of Cherise Gilbert. That's about it. And that the car was seen several days later, sometime later, but not on the date of the incident, in front of that location. Are there any other particular questions?
Do you think you've made an adequate showing that you, assuming we agree that the Franks hearing wasn't waived, have you made an adequate showing that the statements were something other than simple negligence?
Well, I think the stark contrast between the statements and the affidavit show that the restatement was not negligent. It had to be, it appears to be deliberate to fit other evidence. It appears that there was a prosecutive or a law enforcement theory, and then the facts were shoved to fit that theory, rather than a theory formulated around facts.
Thank you. Ms. Lages, we also want to thank you for having taken this case by appointment and doing such a fine job on behalf of your client. Indeed, our thanks to all